All right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again. It's the Dom and Colin podcast. We are talking more Survivor David versus Goliath. I am Colin, here with Dom. Dom, how are you?
I'm splendid, as always, although I'm a little confused because it's a Thursday, as far as I can tell.
It is very strange. It is a Thursday. It is a little bit after noon here on the East Coast, I guess, to immediately hashtag date this podcast. I was actually thinking about this. This has got to be easily one of, like, the two or three, if not the literal number one, most recent to the episode airing time that we are recording a podcast. I don't know if we've ever done a Wednesday night recording, and rarely do we get off the ground before noon on any of these podcasts. So this could easily be an historic moment, Dom.
There was a time when recording the podcast on Thursday meant it was more likely we were so late from the previous week that we were just now catching up than it was that we were getting it early on the ground floor with the most recent episode. But it's a brave new world here, Colin, and I'm excited to live in it.
Well, I'm wondering, did we ever hit any seasons? I don't know when they switched from the Sunday finale to the Wednesday finale. Because I know, at least like in watching Heroes versus Villains recently, they're still doing the Sunday finale there. And so if we were early enough that, like, South Pacific, perhaps, had a Sunday finale, maybe we said for this week only, it's like a priority to get it out early. But it's certainly been a long time since we've recorded a Survivor episode on a Thursday.
I think you're definitely right about that. But in that case, we were forced into doing that. There was no agency or no choice whatsoever. So we couldn't really take credit for that. Whereas this, I feel like we can give ourselves a pat on the back, assuming we actually finish this in due time.
So one thing I want to go back to, this is the second week in a row, or maybe one of them was a Heroes versus Villains podcast, but recently, and then again today, you have said that you're doing splendid, and I love that. I like that that's your kind of intro for these recent podcasts, and I'm wondering, are you just kind of embracing a great word, or are you actually doing a lot better in life now that you're in Canada?
A little bit of both, to be honest. Mostly the former, but, you know, okay. Hopefully the latter can pick up as soon as well.
All right. Well, I just wanted to note that, and I hope that life continues going splendidly for you, Dom. I just wanted to give you a little credit for your diction there. I guess before we get into the Survivor action today, we've had a lot going on the podcast feed lately. Dom, you actually just put up a couple of episodes either yesterday or the day before at the time of this recording. What's been going up lately, in case people didn't see that in time or haven't checked those out yet?
So speaking of recency, I've been saying that I wanted to do an episode about the West Wing for a good 2 years now or so, possibly more. Finally got around to doing that, was able to get a great guest that was worth the wait, the wonderful Kelly Bedard, and had a lot of fun going over all of that. Hopefully some more West Wing content in the future. Not sure exactly how or who with or in what format, but really enjoyed doing that. You haven't even seen the show,
guy. I guess, no, I'm first of all, I am kidding and probably should not have interrupted you there. No. But second of all, I gave that a fair shot. I watched the first three seasons of that show.
Okay, well, that's better than my approach of just watching the first 15 minutes of a pilot and then deciding, issuing a formal judgment on the rest of the show for the rest of time. But that was a lot of fun. Hopefully more of that in the future. And also, we had some Survivor Australia, final words, as I've been calling it, with Dan Leapy, who you had on the first time around when I wasn't there. I had him back on this time when you weren't there. And I think between the two of us, we managed to get a pretty decent coverage of the whole season there.
Yeah, although, just for the official record, I did laugh, and this is the first Dom is hearing of this kind of criticism. As far as I'm concerned, there is a distinction between Survivor Australia and Australian Survivor, which is the name of the show that you talked about and did not title the podcast Australian Survivor. You titled it a completely different thing.
We had this debate before and conclusively established that nobody cares except for you. So I move forward on that basis. And luckily, the two of us were there together for probably the biggest item of the week, the Making the Murder, Making a Murderer, there we go, podcast that we did with Dominic Abate and the great Chris Hammonds.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it's disrespectful. It's like calling it Canadian Big Brother instead of Big Brother Canada. You've heard the title 1,000 times over the course of the season. But not to undersell the last thing you mentioned there, great time talking about Making a Murderer with Dom and Dominic Abate and Chris Hammonds, who is indeed a lawyer, I can confirm at this time, officially a lawyer. So I think we included him as at least an honorable mention on that list. That was a lot of fun, or at least as much fun as it can be talking about such a kind of dark subject matter, but great times there. So definitely do check any of those podcasts out if you were familiar with any of those shows. All right, Dom, before we actually dive into the specifics of today's episode, I had a couple of big picture kind of questions that I thought would be interesting to get into, because through these first eight episodes, I think the overwhelming kind of story of the season, setting aside anything that's actually happening on the island, is just how much it seems like pretty much everyone seems to be enjoying this. And we've talked about this in the past, obviously, and have always kind of said, yeah, it's off to a great start, but we were saying the same thing about Ghost Island this time last season. Let's not rush to judgment. We have now hit the merge. We not only had a great merge episode, we have now had a thrilling, what's the opposite of penultimate, where it's the one after the beginning? Second, I guess, could be the term. The second episode after the merge was a lot of excitement as well. So, Dom, I want to ask you, how live is this season drawing at being one of the all-time great seasons of Survivor for you? Like, what is the ceiling? Are we potentially looking at something that has outs to be in the discussion with, like, heroes versus villains and whatever else people want to put up there?
Well, my Latin's too rusty to answer your first question, but for the second, I'm in love with the season, and usually whenever a season is held in universally high regard, there are always one or two people saying, well, actually, you know, there are this thing and this thing that's negative about it. And often I'm one of those people. But in this case, I love it. Everybody else seems to love it too. I haven't heard a murmur of criticism about the season so far. Even the people who are the least high on it tend to say stuff like, oh, well, it wouldn't make my top 10 or something, or I'm not loving it too much. But it's not saying this season is actively bad. It feels like people tend to agree. They've got all the right ingredients this time around. And certainly I've heard things said like it's the best season among the 30s or the best season in the past few years, however you want to bracket that. So, yeah, it feels like the sky is the limit and it's living up to the hype so far. And, yeah, with Ghost Island, the pre-merge was fantastic and the merge episode was great too. And through that series of seven or eight episodes, that also would have been spoken about in the same terms. But I'm more optimistic that this one can keep that momentum going down the home stretch. I think it's less polarized in terms of these are the big stars and these may be some of the duds. There's less of a worry that all of the screen time will just get vacuumed up by the same few people. And I could see some less satisfying endings to the season based on the people that I'm personally rooting for or rooting against. But even if that happens, like I'm optimistic that the episodes themselves would be great. I'm loving watching the entire cast. All the characters are fantastic. So, yeah, I really don't have a bad word to say about it so far.
Right. I think the thing you just hit on that I would say is the most important and why I'm so optimistic going forward is I am not worried at all about a couple of people starting to eat up all of the camera time. I think no matter how this ends up going, we're going to get a really not fully balanced, but much more balanced than I think we've seen historically kind of edit of the season. And I don't mean to suggest that I've been coming in each week just waiting for the shoe to drop and waiting for it to get bad, because that's absolutely not the case. I've just been mentally not ruling the idea out that it could quickly deteriorate quality-wise. But after the first seven episodes, which I'm fully on board with being in the discussion for among the best pre-merges of all time and a fantastic merge episode, we come in here this week, and not only does the shoe not drop, we get what, for my money, is probably the best episode of the season.
Coming off the heels of a perfectly fine merge episode, this just ratcheted up the quality even further. So I'm sure it can't keep going up. I'm sure there will be a little bit of a lull in the next few episodes. But even if there is, I'll happily take that as a trade-off.
Right. There was something in some recent episode, it may have been this David versus Goliath discussion last week when we were talking about how great the season looks going forward. I brought up the idea of Survivor Maryland syndrome, where there is like no good outcome. Every person left in the game is someone you hope to see stick around for a while. And while that is on one hand, like, kind of an issue because every vote out is going to be heartbreaking to some extent. That is the single best problem I would say any season of Survivor can have, and I think putting an emphasis on making that as realistic as they can and giving us a reason to care about as many people as possible is the number one thing that is making this season so overwhelmingly popular with so many people, I would imagine.
It's a great problem to have, and it's one that you would hope you could take for granted on an All-Star season where you're able to cast around that explicit goal. It's comparatively rare to have that just on a regular cast, and of course you shoot for that every single time, and if the casting director is doing their job, you hope that a good 75% of the cast is going to hit that mark. But this time around, it feels like, with one or two personal exceptions, like I know everybody has that one character that they're rooting for more than everyone else or less than everyone else, it feels like by and large the entire cast forms this really cohesive unit, and that's so fantastic to see.
Yeah, I definitely am very much, if it's not clear by now, on board with the kind of what seems to be just universal acclaim for this season, and obviously looking very much forward to seeing how the rest of this goes. But Dom, let's get into this newest episode, episode 8, I think. Yes, episode 8. And let's begin with the previously on Survivor. And we just get a pretty quick recap of the strike force forming and Angelina kind of ruining what would have been a big time blindside on Elizabeth, but instead Angelina told her the plan and that kind of became a whole ordeal. Anything stand out to you from the previously on this week?
Nothing too much, really just setting the stage, but we immediately get into relitigating that because Angelina, as soon as they get back from camp, is going to not apologize, but also not fully like clear her own name to the group. She just, I guess, tries to justify her behavior, saying that, well, actually, it was Elizabeth who came to me and I was just putting it off. And yeah, I made a mistake, but there was no bad intention behind it. And surely you can see that. And nobody is having any of it whatsoever. And it's at the point where they trust her so little that her attempts to brush out under the rug are only making things worse for herself.
Right. And I thought they did a great job with this scene and the way that they edited this, where we got to hear from a few people. I know, I think it was Dan, Alec, and Kara were at least three of the people that we got to hear from who they gave kind of like micro confessionals to and lined them up back to back to back. Of each of them got like an 8-second clip of them individually going through why they're suddenly finding Angelina so kind of shady here. And I think this is the exact kind of editing technique that we have been kind of advocating for without realizing what specifically we were looking for. But these kind of ways of showing a lot from several different people without taking up too much time and just giving us small hits from the entire cast over the course of a season, you can really get to know people a lot better. And I think this kind of thing, if this is something they want to continue doing, not just to I guess kind of bury people, but for other purposes as well, I think this could be a really effective storytelling technique going forward for with the show.
And it's great when the editors let us read the room, I guess, or be a fly on the wall in real time, and just showing these tiny snippets of conversation between all of these different people, I think those add up to maybe more than the sum of their parts, where you might think, how much can you really accomplish just by showing Allison for 5 seconds, and then Alec for 5 seconds, and so on, but it really does just let you check in with everyone and see where their heads are at, and get a good just general sense of where the game's going from there.
And I would also say, it probably is more effective in hammering home whatever message you're trying to hammer home to just show the real talking point from a few people in a row instead of having Christian wax philosophical about it in a 25-second monologue confessional.
Which we still got, by the way, but the rest of the time they spread a bit more evenly. But yeah, it's if the point that you're trying to hammer home to the audience is everybody thinks Angelina is shifty, then showing Alex saying, "Angelina, you slime ball," and then someone else just tearing Angelina apart, and then a third person, and then a fourth person, that does so much more than, yeah, again, a 30-second soliloquy in exactly the same tone and with exactly the same content on why Angelina just isn't trustworthy for some reason.
Right. Angelina kind of got the reverse Andy Heron treatment here, right? That scene from BB15 we talked about earlier where they did the montage of everyone in the diary room talking about how thrilled they were that Andy was the new head of household. Like, literally everyone in the house talking about how thrilled they were that Andy was the new head of household. And Angelina's, like, the opposite of that here, just kind of getting buried through these little quick hits. So I suppose, Dom, there will be no Andy-Jelena alliance to be had just yet.
That fruit is so low hanging that it's just lying on the ground. There's really no effort.
Yet still so sweet and delicious, baby.
You think there would be some more recent examples, but it's good to hear that even 5 years on, you also are happy that Andy Heron is in the
I sure am, man. I absolutely am. I think Andy Heron is truly one of the all-time.
We know, Colin.
Whatever. neither here nor there. Not the podcast for that. But yeah, so definitely loved. As unfortunate as it may have been for Angelina, I thought this was a phenomenal way of showing the situation in a fast way that really lets us catch up with a bunch of different people, and would love to see more of that on the show whenever they're able to work that in. Anything else on Angelina and the whole jury management fiasco here? Do you think she could have done anything better?
I guess just not say anything at all, but I don't know if that's within Angelina's range or really a realistic approach for handling it in the first place. So I don't think we were ever seeing that. I guess she just has to try and lie low for the next few days, but it's hard because you had so much heat coming towards you at that tribal. And there is a chance that, firstly, if your own group turns on you, then you're going to be the target. And then if there's a decoy, as we see later in the episode, it's going to be you because it's so believable to everybody left in the game that they might want to turn on Angelina. And you wonder, why is that so believable as it happens? Like, is it because there is actually like a basis in truth in there somewhere? So I can't fault her at all for feeling paranoid, and then she has to try and do something to get herself out of that bind.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely understand the impulse for sure. And I'm really not sure what you can really do about it in Angelina's spot once you're so obviously exposed for what was blatantly happening. And I think maybe just owning it is the better approach potentially once everyone seems to be kind of fed up with what's going on. But I do understand feeling like making that kind of cursory effort to say, oh, no, you guys are getting the wrong idea, is a line that one would be compelled to take. I'm not going to dock her too many points for that. All right. Dom, one thing I thought was really fascinating when we first see this next scene, it's a conversation between Christian and Mike White talking on the beach, and it sets up and they're like, oh, I feel so good about this six. And hey, I know we haven't gotten to talk yet, but hey, right now could be a good time to talk. Oh, yeah, that sounds perfect. I thought we were being set up for, look at these two guys, peas in a pod, Survivor super fans, can't wait to run the game as kind of the head of this group of six, a David and a Goliath coming together. Obviously, within about 15 minutes, Mike White's going to be gunning directly for Christian himself. What did you think about this scene where we end up seeing Mike talking about how he feels a little uneasy about Gabby, and Christian gives a confessional reacting to that? I really was taken aback by what a different direction this ended up going than I thought for sure it was going to be heading.
Yeah, that was weird. Do you think it played into Mike later deciding to stick with the Goliaths and go after Christian, or do you think that was what he was planning to do the entire time?
I really don't know. Again, I was so thrown off by this that like, as the beginning of this was going on, I was already counting all of these chickens before they hatched about how this newfound bond between Christian and Mike White was going to impact who might leave, a David or a Goliath, based on which one of them ended up getting their way and how Nick was going to fit into that. And I was almost barely paying attention when the table started turning on Gabby and Christian gave that. It was like Christian's really animated face that drew me back in to realize, oh, this isn't going swimmingly necessarily. So I think it may have been, if this is what you were asking, like getting such a good vibe potentially from Christian and feeling like he comes across as so composed, that may have almost triggered Mike White to potentially say, whoa, we got to take care of this guy.
I was more confused by Christian's reaction, not just because him saying that's a weird thing to say could be said about literally anything that comes out of his mouth most of the time, but also because Mike has only known both him and Gabby for what, a few days, and it's weird to expect him to have the same level of trust in Gabby as you do, having been her closest friend for the past, you know, 3 weeks now. So and you can tell with Mike as well, he does have that sense of being a little bit neurotic and taking a while to trust people and really settle into his get into his groove. So for Christian, if he's trying to think in the same terms as Mike, if he's trying to engage him on that level, he would maybe be more understanding of that those reservations. But maybe Mike himself is acting so sketchy that Christian can't help but pick up on that.
Right. That's the thing is, I was on rewatch kind of taken aback. And again, goes without saying, every single time we talk about any single one of these scenes, obviously this is a heavily edited TV show. But for Mike to be willing to put something out there as hard to retract as I don't necessarily feel great about Gabby when he didn't feel like Christian would definitely respond well to that really surprised me. I thought of Mike White as the kind of player who would probably do a lot of adding on, yes, anding a lot of whatever the person he's talking about has to say, and would virtually never be so bold or take such a risk as to outright say, I don't trust fill in the blank, when fill in the blank could easily be that person's closest ally.
Yeah, and I wonder if Christian himself is getting the same kind of reaction from people when I'm sure he has some doubts about the way things are going or feels the need to check in with other people at times. I wonder if he is, you know, like sketching Allison out a bit by expressing doubts about someone else, or just his demeanor in general maybe is making people distrust him a little bit. Although it seems to be having the exact opposite effect, where people don't see him as any kind of threat until this episode, where he becomes by far the most overwhelming threat in the game. And there seems to be no happy medium in there.
Well, I thought Rob made an interesting point on Know It Alls last night along those lines, where I think John Cochran is probably going to play a substantial role in terms of Christian's fate within this game and how the approach that he has to take, where even the more casual people who are not just outright recruits, I would imagine are going to be familiar with Cochran and the kind of game that he played in Karamoan. And that's going to be on their mind when they get out on the island and see Christian. And I would imagine he is aware of that. Like, I think he's the kind of guy who understands probably the reason he was cast on the show is because of John Cochran before him. And that is going to be an uphill battle for him. That's frankly going to be, I think, one of the more interesting storylines as Christian continues his way through the game, is when people finally do say later on down the line, okay, now is absolutely the time. And I guess this episode was when a majority of people were willing to say that and just didn't get their way. And it may be the case that we show up next week and that's the exact same situation again. But I do think Christian is I'm not going to say by no fault of his own, but the willingness to view Christian as a threat is going to be substantially magnified compared to what it might otherwise have been.
I wonder also if there's some kind of David Wright effect going on when,
yeah,
one of the questions we had in the middle part of that season was, it feels like everybody suddenly is saying that he's the biggest threat to win, he has to be taken out, but we don't really know why. And that seems to contrast pretty heavily with that perception of him early on as this like neurotic, bumbling fool who is being saved just by other people or by playing idol somehow. And then there was this transformation in between that we weren't ever privy to. And we were saying like, okay, show us, don't tell us, you know, show us why he's now the biggest threat to win and the guy that everybody insists has to be taken out. And they never really could. And part of that was because, as Adam Klein told us, there was some intentional, like, self-fulfilling prophecy, going on their part to make David become the biggest threat so that he would be a good shield for them. And that worked because as we got towards the end of the game, the fact that he was able to survive for so long, despite that perception being out there in the universe, made him the biggest threat, because that was an impressive achievement that he could hold up high in front of the jury. And maybe there's a similar thing going on with Christian where everyone seems to love the guy. But as I'm not sure who it was that highlighted it. I think it was Alec or Nick. They said, like, I don't know why they're targeting him already. He's not even doing anything yet, which is true. What he's doing, he's not running around and strategizing. He's not forming all these alliances left and right. He's not missing people into doing his will. But he is just hanging out and being likable and getting people to love him. And that's enough to make him into a big threat, which now will force him to start playing strategically because all the artillery fire is coming his way.
Yeah, I think the David Wright thing, and I could easily see this happening to Christian as well, and maybe that's a lot of what went on this episode. I believe Adam Klein would say himself, yeah, at a certain point, I recognized I don't want to sit next to David Wright, so I'm just going to outright throw out as much propaganda as possible and just tell everyone what a threat he is and just beat it into their brains over the course of the last 3 weeks or whatever of this game. And by the time the Final Four rolls around, even Ken is willing to turn on his closest ally because he knows what a big threat he is.
Yeah, it's not even fake news because it becomes true the more you say it. So it starts off as fake news, and then eventually it comes full circle and is now just the outright truth again.
Well, Brett, I think Adam Klein would also say, in doing a lot of the things that he did at Tribal Council, in particular, where he would talk up what a big and obvious threat David was. Like, in particular at Final Five, when David still goes back to camp that night, I bet Adam was very unhappy about how great of a job he'd just done painting David as a slam dunk vote if he gets to face a jury. And I think that kind of propaganda, he goes in knowing he's running the risk of, like, yeah, if David does make it to the end, I'm essentially spending this whole game making the case for why you must vote for him over me. But he's doing all of this knowing the reason I'm doing it, like, the reason behind this is to make sure that under pretty much no circumstances the David figure can make it to the end without running the table. And I could easily see Christian being the person filling that role this season.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Nick and Davey and Carla on maneuvers, literally in Davey's case, he's doing this weird, like, taekwondo, jujitsu, acrobatic stuff in full view of everyone else so that the others can go off and hump the idol. So he's, I guess, like, running interference for Nick and Carl, but it works.
It reminded me of Sangmin in the elevator game.
Yeah, or I guess, like, he is doing Coach Chi, but like with Coach, he's the only one doing it. But this time that actually works to his advantage. That's what he wants. So while everyone else is so transfixed by that, Nick and Carla are off finding part two on this treasure quest for this advantage. And it turns out they find a vote seal, which historically has not been put to the best effect. And I'm sure they were a little bemused that it wasn't either an idol or something with more objective power than the vote seal. But this is definitely something which, especially in light of this episode, when that Goliath majority is being pared down and it's at, what, 6-5 now? Like, that vote seal could swing this vote and then potentially every consecutive vote if things break their way.
Right, yeah, this vote steal could end up being the deciding factor, potentially, in how the final 11 plays out. And then, of course, if that six-person majority wants to, they could just roll with it from there. So this could be a legit game-changer. But I'm wondering, are you excited to see the vote steal back in the game, just given how ineffective it's generally been as an actual tool within the game? Or are you cool with just the buzz it kind of generates and the possibility for it to go wrong?
I like the buzz. In the past, it's failed because people played it at times purely on their own behalf, and they've miscalculated or maybe just weren't let in on the fact that it wasn't going to work the way that they hoped. Whereas this time around, if you're just using it to turn a 6-5 minority into a 6-5 majority, then there's really nothing that can go wrong. Or so you would think. We never want to say that for sure, but that feels like a much more clear-cut case than, I think the votes are coming on me, so I'm going to steal the vote, and it's going to be 3-2-2 against somebody else, or whatever convoluted scheme you cook up in your head.
If it were me out there, and I wound up with specifically the vote steal advantage, I would be such scared money with that thing. Like, I would be dying to just play it immediately and make as the grandest gesture possible to try to look as loyal as I can to my allies as I play that thing at the very first opportunity. I want no part of giving any kind of confessionals about whether or not I'm going to play it and how good I feel now that I have the vote steal. I want to just get rid of it and move on as a regular citizen in the game.
I don't think we brought this up before, but if you steal someone's vote, can you cast their vote against themselves?
Yeah, Steven did that with Joe.
Oh, of course. So we potentially could get the first ever unanimous vote, like literally unanimous vote.
That would be absolutely epic if someone, obviously knowing that the vote did not need to be stolen, actually did steal the only vote that would have gone the other way.
I'm mostly kidding, but in a game which so often now is about these big performances, these big moves, which if you look beneath the surface don't actually make a lot of sense, but the spectacle of them is enough to bolster your standing in the eyes of the jury. I wonder if that by itself would count as a big move. Like if I send someone out with the first ever unanimous vote and they're the type who, in air quotes, respects the game, then does that count for more in their eyes? Like, does that get me extra brownie points?
I would say it would do the opposite. I would say doing that to someone is like rubbing it in or like shaming them or whatever. The same way, you know, if what Bob did to Randy Bailey with the fake idol had been someone other than Randy, I could see that losing Bob a lot of points.
Sure. If someone did that to you, would they gain or lose points in your estimation?
I would find that funny. I think if I was already leaving unanimously and they actually, I would embrace that place in history, I think.
Yeah, so it's clearly a powerful tool, not one that we've seen used to good effect in the past, but it's always been fun when that's failed, because someone usually gets overconfident. They think they've cooked up this amazing scheme that's going to blindside everybody, and instead it always rebounds back on them. It is worth noting, though, the contrast with the idol nullifier. Like when Carl tells Nick about that, he's amped up and he's excited, and I'm sure he's putting on a little bit of that for show, but you can tell it's like, okay, great. These are, well, one of these things is not like the others. You know, if we have Davey's idol and my vote seal and your idol nullifier, I guess. And also, I think there's still some confusion about how that's meant to work in the eyes of a lot of the viewers, because I was watching with a viewing party last night, which was a pretty solid mix between quite serious fans and casual fans, and fans in between who had a lot of stuff in their memory that they have just dredged up, but it never really fit together in any consistent way. And they were like screaming at the TV for him to play the idol nullifier when both of those idols came out, and not understanding at all that the time for that was long in the rearview mirror. That wasn't on the table anymore. So based on that highly scientific experiment, I'm not sure how much that one is really settling with the audience either.
Right. I did think it was cool that this Nick, Davey, and Carl trifecta each has their own kind of like distinct superpower, but I guess you are right, where it's kind of like that Mitchell and Webb recurring sketch where one of them is the angel summoner and one of them's a guy on a BMX bike, and that's and that's like the disparity in power. Oh, why don't we just summon the angels?
Right. I do love that the three of them, I don't know if it's as a marriage of convenience or they're just forced together by circumstances, but the three of them seem to have this nice like ragtag crew going, and that's quite fun to see, especially as Carl is like the gruff older one, Davey's the jokester of the bunch, and then Nick is just missing everybody into falling in love with him somehow. We need to, I know we've mentioned it before and other people have mentioned it too, but it feels like we don't talk about that enough given how just absolute a hold he seems to have over the entire cast at this stage.
Oh yeah, I mean, I feel like big Nick energy would be the theme of this episode.
Perfect. But yeah, I don't know who got the fishy last night. It would be highway robbery if it wasn't Nick.
I don't know either. I click on Steven's blog and haven't read it yet, but I'm sure I will. We could look into that.
This is the downside of doing this on a Thursday. We don't have the time to go back and scope out and steal other people's hot takes and then present them as our own yet.
Right. Yeah, no, I think Nick has been absolutely killing it lately. And I'm sure we'll talk plenty more about Nick as the podcast goes on. But Nick in this spot now seems to be, no matter how things shake out from here, I would imagine probably going to be a pretty central figure in whatever majority alliance ends up coming together at Final Six.
Sure. So let's move on to this reward challenge now. And in many cases, you wouldn't even call this a reward because they're playing for pizza. And as we've seen so many times in Survivor Past, their pizza is just soggy cardboard. It doesn't live up to the title at all. So even if you're a pizza fan for some reason, then this isn't too appetizing for you. But I think it was Gabby who said that maybe they turned things around, or they actually, I don't know, hired a good pizza chef or something, because it was actually worth the wait this time.
Yeah, I always love it when stuff like this comes up on the podcast, where I can just get Dom to give me your just honest take about, not Survivor pizza, but you got a nice hand-tossed Brooklyn-style mozzarella with some sausage and some bacon on there. Dom, you at all interested in this delicious slice of heaven?
get rid of that bacon, first of all. And could really do without the mozzarella, too. I don't think anything has ever been improved by adding cheese to it. But we can have that discussion another time.
Actually, this is a discussion we had earlier today. Dom came at me with a take that here's an original Dom Harvey take. Cheese is the most overrated food.
Where is the lie? How can you argue against that?
I didn't even disagree, as you will recall. I just thought it was a very interesting kind of viewpoint to put out there, and I wanted, tweet specifically at DomHRV with your thoughts if you were someone offended by the concept of cheese being the most overrated food.
Well, on this platform, we love to be open-minded and explore things from lots of people's different points of view. So I'm glad that we can live up to that philosophy of tolerance.
Yes, as we always do. Let's get into the reward challenge this week. Dom, another Australian Survivor, not Survivor Australia challenge, coming across, not just across the border, but across the world, making its debut in America here, where we have six teams of six holding up bags of sand, and people can drop out, and every 15 minutes, I suppose, someone must drop out, and whenever a team drops one of their bags of sand, the whole thing's coming down, and that's it. So you're only as strong as your weakest member, something we've seen a couple of times, at least on Australian Survivor. Dom, what did you think of seeing yet another challenge from Australian Survivor make it to the US version?
Well, I guess it's a challenge from Australian Survivor, which they lifted from earlier US versions. So we're coming full circle here. But I love seeing this again. It's always fun to watch. Minimal effort for the challenge team. Not that they can't put that effort in if they want to. They always do sterling work. But this is a challenge which, you know, if you're coming up close to a deadline or something, you can just unearth those bags from a basement in a production compound somewhere and you're good to go, right? There's not much other work you have to do. And it's just a fun challenge to watch. Like, you can see the strain that it puts on everyone. And I like the way they set it up, where you can transfer the weight around. So there's like some subtle politicking and signaling around who wants to bear the most weight and who doesn't want to drop out first and who feels no shame about dropping out first. And you get to see some of that going on. But I like this challenge. And I especially like that it was Dan and his hubris that ended up costing them the entire reward here.
Yeah, the unfortunate part for Dan was standing back, telling himself he's the man and reminding himself of how much he's got this. Unfortunately, didn't come through for him here, although I suppose a bit of a different story come immunity challenge time. Spoiler alert. But yeah, very much enjoyed watching Dan giving the other team a hard time as he's triple barreling on one hand, and then one of them just slips, and that's the end of the challenge for his entire team. It was a lot of fun.
Can we talk about how good Kara was in this challenge quickly? Because you had all of these incredibly muscly, strong guys just grunting as they struggled under the weight of these bags. And then you have this tiny blonde just off to the side who's holding them up as if she doesn't have a care in the world.
Doesn't have a care in the world. Would you go so far as to say, Dom, that she doesn't need to be Kara-ed, bro?
I would absolutely not say that under any circumstances.
She certainly doesn't need her sandbag to be carried at the very least. But yeah, I definitely was impressed by Kara in this challenge. It was she was one of the quieter people this week, I would say. But certainly when she was on the screen, looked solid.
Yeah, and we don't get to hear too much from her outside of this, in this episode or in general, really. And maybe that will change next week when the romance we've all been cheering for will finally come to an end, it seems like. But for now, she's playing fairly low-key and doing it fairly well from what we can tell.
Yeah, definitely looking for... I still got all of my hopes riding on her and Dan. She and Dan? Her and Dan?
Her and
getting
Dan.
Together. Her and Dan, thank you. Getting together and making it the distance. I'm really going to be heartbroken if that one doesn't work out. Let's talk... I guess we can just transition quickly into the immunity challenge since we're on the challenges here already. As mentioned, Dan, it's going to go a little better for him here. This is the challenge. It is a buoy that you hold up with two sticks, and I knew I had seen it before. I had absolutely no idea if it was on American or Australian Survivor. I was ready to say, whoa, a whole week of challenges from Australian Survivor, but it turns out Brad Culpepper won this challenge when they ran it on season 34, and if you missed that piece of trivia the first time, don't worry, because Jeff will remind you about 20 more times over the course of the challenge.
Is Brad Culpepper your hero, Colin?
He would have been if he had taken tie and won the game. I think all winners are equally tied for the number one spot of all time. So, yeah, absolutely.
Do you think the feeling is mutual? Is Brad cheering on Dan from his Florida mansion somewhere?
Not ironically, I would guess Brad Culpepper may not even be a big time Dan fan. I feel like Brad is someone who would probably be drawn to like the Christian types of the world.
You heard Brad talking on one of his many seasons about how the John Cochrans are now the true threat. So you might be onto something there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think with good reason, they're the good threats. Like, and understandably as well, why they keep getting cast, because they're so entertaining. And I think Brad Culpepper would not be wrong necessarily to be liking the Christians of the world quite a bit. But frankly, I feel like Dan, not just this podcast, but a lot of the podcasts we've done, most of the conversation that focuses around Dan tends to be kind of at his expense, but I do want to put out there, I am non-ironically liking Dan to at least some extent this season. He does seem like a genuinely nice enough guy out there at the very least, and he's certainly playing hard and trying his best. And while he may be caught up in this showman's, and that might not always be the set of priorities that I want to see out there, I have certainly no issue with continuing to see Dan on my screen for several more weeks. I am not at all someone who's just dying for him to finally get blindsided.
I like how much everybody else just seems to dislike Dan. That's my take on things.
And isn't that why you want him to stay on, just like I do, for as many weeks to keep getting all of that kind of, generating all of that kind of controversy?
That's definitely part of it. I will say as well, I love this hate man's frenemyship, whatever it is that he has with Angelina, where to me, some of the most interesting pairings on Survivor are strong allies who hate each other and can't seem to move past that personally, but somehow in the game, it works out for them anyway. And you can tell the two of them, if they had any other options, as far as they saw it, they would cut the other one loose. And yet we have Dan accidentally saving the person he wanted to get out of the game somehow, and in return losing one of his closest alliances in order to keep the vote going on one of his other closest friends instead. And so somehow it's Angelina who survives unscathed from all of that.
Right. So Dan is going to come away here with the immunity necklace. And that, I believe, is all we have on the immunity challenge. At least I do, unless you have anything else as I continue to kill time and figure out where to go next. And let's go next to Mike White, who is having an internal struggle now after having that conversation with Christian on the beach. He is nervous that if he sticks with the strike force, he's going to potentially be handing control of the game over to this group of Davids. And the first thing that he wants to do is talk to Alec, who has been a surprisingly close ally of his, as far as I was anticipating entering this merge, but both strike force members. And he says to Alec, similarly to how he said earlier to Christian, perhaps getting in his own way a bit by making it clear how nervous he was about Gabby, he is going to go through that same process here with Alec and confide a little too much and say, hey, I think Christian may be potentially a really appetizing target here this week. And this puts Alec in a really interesting situation where I would imagine Alec, out of all of these Goliaths, is probably going to be the least compelled to want to stay Goliath strong after that whole Natalia thing. So where do you want to dive in on how all of this starts breaking down against Mike White, essentially?
Well, you have this odd game of telephone being set up where after Mike says this to Alec, Alec then goes and talks to Nick, and we don't get to see the next gap being filled in, but we have to imagine Nick tells Davey or Carl, and there's some discussion over how to save Christian, and then we see Nick break the news to Christian himself, to Mason or Dixon or whichever one Christian is, and he seems fairly shocked by that. And this is something which we highlighted a few weeks ago, that Christian is doing a great job of playing the perfect passive social game in terms of everyone loves him and he was included on all of the votes that he'd had to endure so far. But when the time comes for people to actually take a shot at him, is he going to realize that? And will he be able to get the numbers to overturn that? And in this case, he didn't realize it. And the tribal lines were so strong that he wasn't able to overturn it. But luckily, he has Davey as this kind of angel on his shoulder coming in to save the day.
He's the angel summoner.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I thought it was really interesting. And I think as we get into how this vote ends up going down, and as we talk about just Christian in general, probably specifically, I think it is worth remembering that the majority of votes still do come in here on Christian, and he is not at all necessarily out of the woods by any stretch yet at this point. It does seem like plenty of people recognize what a threat he could potentially end up being, but at the same time, it does seem like the most important people as we enter this round of 11 are probably going to have Christian's best interests in mind. And I'm thinking particularly about Nick when I'm saying that, but also clearly Davey and Carl seem to have a lot of sway within that group as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that'll be really interesting to see play out. But what did you think of Alec's role in all this, where Alec, who seems to be becoming a palic of many people out here on the island, has a lot going on and has Mike come to him and say, hey, what about this possibility of going for Christian, to then go and tell Nick about that situation? And we obviously see what Nick ends up doing with that information. What did you think of that decision from Alec?
I think I like it, but I don't know. And I don't know how I'm meant to even evaluate that. Right.
It's tough, but just based on what we're seeing as in terms of the Goliaths and their reaction to what he did to Natalia, I think I like it too, just on the grounds of I'm with him. I don't want to be involved in some kind of super Goliath endgame. And honestly, I can't believe I'm saying this. At this point, I feel like I have no real reason to doubt Alec's impulse out there. It seems like when he's talking about the game, he is framing it in the terms and thinking in terms that I would very much like to see him speaking and thinking in.
Yeah, my first reaction to Alec was, oh, he's just a dumb surfer guy, and he's going to annoy people so much that he'll be out of there pretty quick. Then my next reaction was almost the polar opposite. It's Alec is doing so well that maybe he's going to overplay his hand and try and play too hard, too fast, and build on all of these prior successes. But he seems to have reached this happy medium in between where he's able to be this conduit for all of these conversations without any attention really coming on him, despite the fact that he was the first one to blur the lines between David and Goliath by turning on Natalia. And in the light of that, I think I do like the move, when if you've already made several loud statements that you're trying to move beyond this David versus Goliath paradigm, then you may as well stick to that. You may as well keep your options open and not just commit yourself to a Goliath endgame where you've already marked yourself as being willing to turn on other Goliaths.
I'm ready for this to be immediately fact-checked and proven drastically false, but is Alec the youngest person left in the game?
How old is Alec?
I believe he's 24.
Wow.
Younger than you, for the record.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. I mean, there are several other people who are younger than you too, but that's we can sweep that under the rug. Who else would even be in contention? I guess
I think isn't Gabby like mid-20s, somewhere in there?
I was gonna say Gabby, I think, is 25 26. Then
Nick is probably mid late 20s,
27 28. Is this a subtly older cast than maybe we've been expecting for a while now?
I mean, one of us flagged up early on in this season what a not subtle older cast this was, and was shot down for making that observation.
By me?
Yes. Maybe not. Actually, you were gone during all
yeah,
of that.
I was going to say.
Yeah, it might have been like Jordan Parhar was giving me a hard time for, I don't know who it was. But
well, I will happily take credit for Jordan Parhar's work.
All right, well, I will happily do whatever I can to make a British person say the name Jordan Paha as often as I possibly can. So mission accomplished there.
You're welcome. But yeah, I think I like this move by Alec. And then I guess the next link in that chain is Nick, who might have the choice of trying to ingratiate himself with the Goliaths and turn on them. And we've seen this happen before as well, when if you think you're on a sinking ship, you may as well be the first one to jump off it. And we've seen that Nick already is so good at just getting himself into these smaller sub-alliances. So if he has the time to work with, he might actually be able to infiltrate that Goliath Death Star. But instead, he takes his information back to his fellow David men, and they cook up this plan. Or rather, they, minus Christian, cook up this plan to save Christian. It doesn't seem like he really played any part in that.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to get to as it pertains to this plan to turn things on Christian that the Goliaths have, and also something that we talked a little bit about earlier when Gabby was the person last week to flag up where the advantage was, and we had when speculating about who might get it, we thought Gabby would be the front runner, or at the very least, since nothing had come yet of Angelina's comment in the premiere about how, oh, it's high time we change the standard and women start finding more of these idols and advantages, and we're still seeing nothing of that. We get another comment this week, Dom, and this again goes back to things getting turned on Christian, where, if you will recall, this is exactly what Angelina was saying should have been the logic at the last vote, and she gets confessional talking about how it seems that, once again, a plan when presented by a woman is not taken seriously, and then when a man speaks up and says essentially the exact same thing, they are immediately heard out and everyone is on board. So this is another instance, it seems, of Survivor directly addressing a couple of the kind of like gender issues that have been lodged against them, or, you know, complaints that have been made in the past, or just honestly just real issues with the show. What did you think of this, and just this continuing to be something they are actually willing to address on air, even when things aren't even coming of it?
So it feels like a trap, given that disagreeing with this makes you part of the problem, but let's wade in anyway, you know. Let's embrace the hate. So I think there's definitely something to it, but it's firstly hard to tell whether this is just an Angelina problem or whether the other Goliath S's are having the same issue. So if Allison brings up an idea to the group, is she getting shot down, or is that idea getting co-opted by somebody else? Or if Kara speaks up, is Dan, I assume it's Dan, taking credit for her idea? We don't really know. And so we don't know if it's a case of this social issue that Angelina is identifying, or just an issue with her being on the outs in the game and no one wanting to give her credit for maybe actually having a good idea here. Because I think she is right. Like, as we said last week, these are good reasons to turn on Christian. It's just an issue of timing. The other thing is, I don't think it's fair to say that I had exactly the same idea last week, and now that it's being proposed by a man in Mike, people are listening, because it's a different idea. Like, the idea of voting out Christian when it's at the merge and Elizabeth is still there, I think it's very different from voting out Christian when there's really no other viable alternative, or at least he stands tall above the rest of the crowd. And also, Angelina's credibility has been shot to pieces. And also, Mike is now having these doubts based on the conversations that he's had with Christian himself that have caused him to bring this idea up to the group. Whereas before, it felt like, you know, he had this six-person alliance brewing beneath the scenes and had no reason to break that up just yet. I'm still not sure what reason he has to break it up, but he seems to think there is one. So I don't know if it's a case of him suddenly becoming enlightened to Angelina's wisdom. I think it's just a case of circumstances changing. And then finally, it's Survivor, right? Like, if you can take credit for someone else's good idea in the cause of building a resume, which is a phrase you hear often on the show now, then of course you're going to do that. And in the real world, it would be obnoxious and a shitty thing to do. But on Survivor, that's fair game, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I had essentially the same takeaway, which was, while what Angelina is saying about gender dynamics on Survivor is and not only on Survivor, but in general, is absolutely valid, I didn't necessarily know if it was applicable in this exact situation. And I don't mean to take anything away from the larger point, which is absolutely an issue both on and off the island. But I had the exact same thought you did, which is, it is a much different situation than this is the first round of the merge and Elizabeth is still here. And now with 12 people left, it really does seem like, what else would the Goliaths do other than target Christian if they did want to, if they felt good enough about coming together? It seems like that makes by far the most sense for them. So I certainly understand and empathize or sympathize, whichever one is accurate, with Angelina's complaint here. It sounds like I come down on roughly the same side as you, and I hope that doesn't make both of us sound unwoke. But I don't know if it is as cut and dry as she was trying to make it seem.
Well, Colin, you are officially cancelled. You are expect the protest outside your shack any day now.
Is there an exposed party coming? Because I definitely am not on board.
I think you've already had yours, but we can have another one if you like.
Okay. I missed it then, but I'm very happy to miss it. Don't need another one if that's already gone down. So I guess before we get into the actual vote, let's talk about Angelina a little further, because one thing I wanted to give her credit for was when her name came up as the decoy boot. This is a spot where I think we've seen a lot of people and potentially a lot of people that one might compare to an Angelina type freak out and blow up their own game irreversibly once they find out that their name might be getting written down, and there's an outside chance if idols fall right that they could end up leaving that night. I wanted to give some credit to Angelina for it really seemed like handling this in a strong way, and understandably not being thrilled about the idea, but not feeling like her own needs should now supersede what is best for this big group. Like, she's not letting she's not missing the forest for the trees, I would say, when it comes to not loving life as the decoy boot, but not letting it get in the way of the bigger picture here.
And she knows that even though, once again, she may have a good point, or at least a good point as it pertains to her own safety within the game, after the events of last week, it's best for her just to lay low, even if she has to grit her teeth if she does it, because she sees the potential for this to go horribly wrong, as it almost does, and I guess eventually does do when she's still in the game, but everything is going pear-shaped for the Goliath group.
Right. It seems like she is coming in recognizing, as much as I would love to try to change this, I am not currently in a situation where I feel I can make a really active effort to do so, because rightly or wrongly, that is going to be viewed as overly aggressive, and it's just going to mean bad things for me, and I'm going to turn a bad situation into a much worse one.
And this goes to what Angelina was saying just now, where I don't know how much of it was she ventures this idea and then Mike ventures the same idea, so therefore we trust Mike more because we all love Mike. It might just be Angelina is in timeout right now and nothing she says is going to be taken seriously, even if it clearly should be. And so she's going to have to make it through the other side of that if she's going to recover in the game. But that's just the way it is for the time being.
One thing I actually meant to take you to task for a little bit earlier is your stance on Mike White that came to light last week, that you are not a Mike White fan. You don't like Mike, and you think he's the worst member of this cast by a wide margin. I do like Mike. I am a big Mike White fan, not just his work off the island, but certainly Mike the Survivor player as well. And I really wasn't sure what to make of Mike this episode. What was your general takeaway from Mike, other than hating him, in terms of how you thought we were meant to perceive Mike?
So I don't think we were meant to really take a strong stance on him either way. My question is, what was it about Christian and Gabby, which I have to imagine we weren't shown or weren't shown fully, that led Mike to reverse course? And maybe it's just a case of he never felt that strongly about the six, and this was something that they injected into the merge episode to amp up the suspense a little bit and to keep us guessing going ahead. But it felt like Mike, at the first sign of trouble, and even if that trouble was manufactured or exaggerated by what he saw, was just running back to the Goliath group, and that was his safety blanket.
Right. It seems like, as we talked through, there were a couple of Mike scenes this week where he essentially thought he was working closely with someone, revealed too much. It turned out they were not at all on board with the idea that he was trying to put out there, and they went and took measures into their own hands to make sure something else went down instead. And as much as I think Mike is out there with a generally really solid social game and really strong set of priorities, I don't know how I can really come away when thinking about the just what happened here element of this episode for Mike White and what his intent was versus the result that he got. Not to be results oriented, I suppose, but, you know, I really don't know how to feel super optimistic about Mike going forward, which I'm very surprised I'm saying right now. Well, just because I entering this week, I really thought a lot of him.
I guess I'm even more surprised to find myself defending Mike White to you right now. But
we've switched now.
Yeah, so I don't think this final outcome was all that bad for Mike. As far as we could tell, he was never that close to John or to Jelena as a unit. And so for Angelina to still be in the hot seat and for John to go, which I imagine would have been a fairly hard thing to engineer in the near future otherwise, that seems perfect for him, right? I'm not sure what the downside is, especially as now the Davids on the other side look like a much stronger threat. And I could see one way that the season could actually slow down a bit now is if in the aftermath of these shocking events at Tribal, if the David solidify on this end, the Goliath solidify on this end, and it turned into much more of a conventional two-tribe season, then Mike seems to be sitting pretty. He has those connections with the Davids that he can exploit if he needs to. The biggest threat in the Goliath group to him is now gone, and one of the others is neutralized. He still has Alec and Allison, who it seems like he's pretty tight with, and no one's going to be coming for him. So I don't see where there's any danger for Mike White. And then also, I don't know if it's he gave away too much information and other people were able to exploit that. I think it's he had these straightforward conversations with his allies. His allies had slightly different priorities at that point in time, and so they made use of that information as they saw fit. But I don't think that reflects badly on Mike White, because if anything, that's what you would expect to see in a season that you want to see, where everyone is playing hard and looking out for their own best interest. Sometimes it's going to make sense for me to tell you something, and it will also make sense for you to run back to someone else and tell that to them as well. And I think both of those things can be true.
So I agree with you that I think this result is totally fine for Mike. It merely came down to me to seeing a couple of instances of Mike going for something, taking a shot where it seemed like he was just barking. He had the right person, but the wrong idea. And that to me just is something that leaves me nervous about Mike going forward. I do agree that this vote was fine and it leaves him in a strong position within the game. But I was coming in, I mean, this time last week, I was saying I thought Mike White was playing like a Andy Heron, not on the same level as Andy Heron, but that same kind of game where it seemed like he was in good with everyone and making all the right ideas. And I stand by making all the right decisions. And I stand by. It seems like he is genuinely good with everyone, and even when he is pitching them to vote out their closest allies, it doesn't appear at this point that they're turning around and saying, forget about that, we got to go for Mike White now. Even when they had a clean look, they went for John over Mike White, and that was something that had crossed my mind, and that's why I bring this up, is because over the course of this episode, I had started to talk myself into the idea that this is either going to mean really good things for Mike White, or Mike White's going to somehow leave tonight. And when the votes got canceled and the first 9 names came out and none of them counted, I was a solid 80-90% sure I was about to see 3 Mike votes come out.
That is a good point, because if there's any time when someone who is completely safe in theory and should never be going home to go home, it would be tonight, when like every single other vote is getting cancelled and someone is going to end up as the unfortunate casualty of that. As it turns out, the Davids thought ahead and knew to split the vote, or at least some of them did. And we can get to that in a bit, because I'm still not quite sure how all of that went down. But the takeaway for me is I don't think we are meant to see Mike as having made some egregious blunder in the game. And the way this was put together, where he tells something to Alec, and then Alec goes and talks to Nick, and then Nick goes and talks to other people. I don't know if any of this failing can be traced back to Mike White.
Maybe it's the case that this is another kind of like Sandra in Heroes versus Villains, or Sandra in Pearl Islands, or many other cases where the winner is constantly shown trying to get their way, not getting their way, but at the end of the day, it's fine because we love them so much that it's all right. And I could easily see...
Okay, hold up. Who are these people who are loving Mike White? I can get not being actively unenthusiastic the way that I appear to be, although somehow I'm defending him now. But who are the Mike White stands out there? I guess you are their spiritual leader.
I will happily take that role. And I think just over the course of the season, even when I would say Mike White, for my money this week, had a pretty bad episode for Mike White, certainly compared to anything he's gotten to this point, it still seems like who out there, other than apparently me, I guess, this week, isn't entering next week still feeling probably pretty good about how Mike White's been playing and the position that he's going to find himself in.
Okay. Stay tuned on that front, I suppose.
I just feel like Mike White is a... I would guess, at least, I haven't been checking on like the Facebook page or anything, but I would imagine Mike White is generally pretty well liked by the audience. Do you disagree? Do you think Mike White is someone they just don't care about?
Let's play a quick game of casual Facebook fan page thinks. So do you think they are liking this season? Because they didn't like anything. And you know, the season doesn't have like a Rupert or a Joe. There's no obvious fan favorite. I guess it could have been John, kind of, but he's gone now. And in circumstances which some people might say he's robbed, or this is such bullshit, or whatever. So do they like this season? And if so, what are they liking about it?
So I would imagine that just by sheer excitingness of the episodes, and based on the casuals that I've talked to, I would guess the average casual fan is very much liking this season. And I would say what they are liking about it, like if we were to go onto the Facebook page, the following statement is not at all fair to probably CBS or Christian, but I think there is some element that both parties understand before he's even out there. CBS is saying, hey man, you love this show. You seem like you could deliver on the same level that Cochran did. That's exactly what we want. Obviously, people respond to that. And he is either overtly or subconsciously saying, I know that's what they want from me, and I can deliver on that. And he's out there doing exactly that. I'm loving it. And I would imagine, Dom, that Christian is the overwhelming fan page.
Okay. I will go and catalog that for next week and have a game fully prepared for next time.
Who else would even be in the mix for it? Like, I would imagine Angelina is despised. Dan is probably not super loved. I don't know who else would be a big fan favorite, like an active fan favorite at this point. I think if you mentioned people like Davey or like Carl or Nick, the CBS casual would be like, okay, yeah, those guys are fine. But I would probably honestly guess Gabby might be the number two, like, most talked about.
She might be the most talked about. I don't know if she's the most liked. I think there's going to be a lot of opprobrium being thrown Gabby's way. But this is why I bring this up, because I don't know who they're meant to be liking on this season. And knowing what I know about the Facebook casuals, they can find reasons to hate anybody. And some of the people on this cast are giving them better reasons than others.
So knowing what I know about you, you too can find reasons to complain about anything. But if you were trying to come up with reasons for the casuals not to be into it compared to an average Survivor season, where would you even begin? I mean, in what capacity is this season lacking other than potentially not having that one big Rupert or Joey Amazing's figure that I would argue is a substantial plus if people actually think about it?
I think their standards for enjoying a season are much different than ours. And so when you ask what reason is there to dislike it, I don't know. Those reasons would not occur to me, but I, luckily or unluckily, depending on where you come down, I don't inhabit the brain of a Facebook casual, so I can't speak to that.
Okay. Well, stay tuned, I suppose. Maybe we can get an update later on who the casuals are all fans of, if we can find some willing sacrificial lamb to go on to the Facebook page for us and find out, because it will certainly not be me, and I'm guessing it will not be Dom doing that kind of laborious research. Let me ask about what you think in terms of the chain of events, and we touched a little on this earlier, but who exactly knew what as things pertain to this vote going down? Because we saw from Davey when he got up to play his idol, he said something to the effect of, hey, to my alliance, I'm sorry I couldn't loop you guys in on this, but I hope you understand why I did that and are going to be happy with the way this all works out. And it seems like implicitly he's saying, I'm the only one who knew. Are you buying that, or do you think that at least the three people who voted John were very aware of what was going to happen?
I was really struggling to piece this together at the time. Firstly, because I was watching with a group, and the hooting and hollering that erupted when we saw John on the parchment just drowned out any rational thought that I could muster up at that stage.
But also, get it. You have friends. I never have anyone to watch with. It's fine. You don't have to keep rubbing it in.
You should move to Canada, Colin. I don't know what to tell you. But also, I was so overcome by just the shock of the moment and enjoying seeing this play out that I wasn't thinking about how this all came together. But in the cold light of day, looking back at it, I'm still not quite sure who knew what when, because we see in the run up to the vote, Nick approaches Davey and they discuss using the advantages that Nick suspects are in play at that point, right? So that he knows about the vote seal, which in theory could turn this around, although we can run the numbers on that and check if that's actually true. And then I believe Nick knew about Carl's idol nullifier, right? So that's in play, but not something that can actually help them in this instance.
Right.
So
I mean, they'd have to be pretty clairvoyant for that to help them.
Right. So I'm assuming the way the vote still works, as before, is, as Jeff says, it's time to vote. Davey will stand up and give some little speech and read his note, and then he'll announce whose vote he's trying to steal, because you can't have the person whose vote is getting stolen go up and vote, right? Like, unless they're improving the power of the vote steal somehow. So
Nick will do that, just for the record.
Yeah, Nick, sorry. So it felt like Nick was genuinely shocked when Davey stood up and played the idol, right? Or maybe it was just for show, but we didn't see that being discussed. Davey said, "I didn't tell anyone about it," although that could also be him covering to the people in his alliance that he didn't tell, because if he tells Nick and he tells Carl but doesn't tell Gabby, let's say, then she might have some choice words for him after the fact. So if Nick didn't know, then after he lets the time lapse when he can play his own advantage, what's he expecting to happen? Does he think, okay, we put up a good fight, but this is over, Christian's going, we'll regroup next time and try and make something work? Or does he actually have an inkling or an outright belief that Davey is going to pull a fast one here?
See, just the way the votes fell, I don't know what other understandable explanation there would be. And again, it's I'm happy to acknowledge one may exist, and maybe Davey, you know, devilish Davey pulled a fast one and spun some yarn to get the votes to land in this direction. But I don't know how these votes end up getting split between how people feel good about that, unless they feel like an idol is going to be there to bail out their side and feel very good that about knowing who the target is going to be to use that idol upon.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I really feel like maybe it is possible that there was some convoluted scheme that got the votes to fall perfectly, but it certainly will not shock me if it turns out Davey told a couple of people, and for the sake of the rest of the alliance, he had to say, sorry for not telling you guys. I didn't wanted to keep it to myself for so it could have maximum effect for all of us.
So was that just Davey who was Davey trying to fool with saying that then? Because if the entire David group, including Christian and Gabby, knew about it, then is that trying to make himself seem as threatening to the Goliaths? Or what is he trying to pull with that?
Yeah, so I think it may have been the case that he told either just Nick or just Carl or just Nick and a couple of people, but not the whole group of people with whom he was voting, that he had that idol, and that was essentially who it was for. Like,
if I can jump in quickly, that's what I thought at first too, but then so we have Christian votes for John, right? Gabby votes for Angelina, so already between the two of them they're voting differently, so they must think there's some other plan in play, because on the face of it seems like the Goliaths are voting one way, the Davids are voting the other way, and the most realistic way for the Davids to win is for one of the Goliaths to flip over or for some vote steal or something which gives you a narrow advantage to be played and swing the numbers in your favor. And you, the two of you voting differently works against that. So they must have had some knowledge of some kind of plan. Not sure what that would be necessarily,
right?
But I have to think that all five of them were in on it, because I can't find any other way it makes sense.
That is compelling, because maybe he just gave the speech for TV or for whatever, because that's what I was trying to get at, is if you're the Davids, how are you trying? This is what I mean is about Davey. Like, what kind of scheme do you have to hatch to get us to be willing to split our votes if we don't know that there's going to be something basically as powerful as an idol there to help us out? It really seems like a suicide mission to even be presenting the Davids with that plan, unless they know about the idol.
So with that in mind, is there any point to Davey pretending like no one knew about it? Or because like everyone can put the pieces together afterwards, right?
It's potentially to make someone like me very happy in the moment. I was clapping so loud when I saw Davey at least claim to have kept the idol to himself the whole time. I was thrilled to see my boy take the Colin Stone approach to idols and just keep it to yourself, or at least allegedly take the Colin Stone approach to idols and always keep it to yourself, barring truly exceptional circumstances, because the element of surprise is the most powerful part of that idol.
And more Davey is always gravy, is your philosophy.
That's exactly what I say every single time. So yeah, very excited about Davey pulling that off, whether he did in fact keep it to himself or not. Because hey, if he didn't keep it to himself, mission also accomplished. This would be one such extenuating circumstance where if he felt like he had a solid grip on what the Goliaths were going to be doing, because he heard through the grapevine from Nick, who heard from Mike White about what the plan was going to be, I'm totally on board with hearing Davey out in terms of, here's why I decided on this day I'm going to tell my group about my idol, and that's exactly what's going to get this vote to go our way, and then we are going to be in a much better spot than we would be otherwise.
Yeah, and however this vote actually came together, I was perfectly happy with the result. I don't need to know all of the behind-the-scenes machinations going on behind the curtain. I was just happy to sit back and bask in the glory of yet another fantastic episode.
Right. Davey never told anyone, and any story to the contrary is not canon. He kept the idol to himself the whole time. 10 out of 10, for sure, by Davey on his idol. Let's also get to, after Davey plays his idol, Angelina, knowing she's the decoy boot, starts to understandably get a little nervous here and start, hey, Dan, buddy,
Dan,
hey,
Dan.
Hey. Remember that idol we talked about? And to a huge surprise, not just to me, but I'm sure plenty of people, they kept cutting back to Dan, and I kept thinking he was just going to sit on it and shrug, kind of like the aforementioned Ty Trang did to Scott Pollard. But Dan pulls the LJ, your boy LJ, and gets up and says, I want to protect my group too. Here's an idol for Angelina. And suddenly, Dom, I was certainly sitting there thinking we could easily have every single one of these votes canceled. And if we don't, it's good game, Mike White.
That was my first thought too. But then if Davey is playing his idol, then surely there's no harm in them throwing a hinky vote somewhere just in case there's also an idol being played correctly on the other side too.
Well, that's why you split it. There's no need for a hinky vote when you're already splitting 3-2.
That's exactly what I mean, though. If you're all voting for Christian, right, and you think all the Davies are voting for Angelina, then yeah, if that's exactly how it works, you cancel everything by idling Angelina. But if there's even one vote that goes stray, if they did four Angelina, one Allison or something, then sorry, Dr. Allison, but your time's up, right?
I think they're protecting against someone from the big group throwing a stray vote against one of them.
How do you mean?
By splitting their votes 3-2, if the big group goes 6-1 instead of 7-0.
You agree with me, you just don't realize it yet. So.
Okay, I'm sorry. Then yes, you are absolutely right.
Thank you. So what I'm saying is, when Davey plays the idol on Christian, right, how do you think those Davies are voting?
When they... I don't understand the question. I'm sorry, I was told there would be no math.
So you are Dan, which I don't think will be hard to imagine. You got the same like aesthetic, roughly the same personality. You've got it all going on, right? You're the hot cop in this case. So you're Dan, you're sitting there just thinking about how awesome you are, and suddenly Davey stands up, which isn't meant to happen, and gives his idol to Christian. How do you think the remaining votes that count in that urn are being split?
Not in my favor. But
right.
Yeah,
but
I understand the question, yeah.
I don't think you do. Look, you know those Davies are voting, they have five votes that are getting apportioned somehow. Do you think they just did a simple, clean 5-0, or knowing that this is only going to work in the first place if we manage to play an idol correctly, we may as well hedge against that possibility on the other side too and put in enough votes so that if there are two idols played, both correctly, like South Africa Werner style, then we still get an outcome that's what we want.
So are you essentially asking me if... Well, Dan wears the necklace, by the way, so there's no risk of him being...
I know that. Look... Okay.
So the most I am Dan insofar as I don't get any of what's going on around me, and
right.
I'm just gonna sit here and think about how awesome I am.
And fixate on the cute blondes, which it all works, it all fits together.
Is that you scenario?
Well, thank you. I'm flattered. So look, you're Dan, right? Can we establish that much?
Okay, I'm Dan.
Okay, good. So you're part of the Goliath majority. You have seven votes, which you have all put on Christian. And we can debate, actually, if some of those votes should have been on someone else to hedge against exactly this happening. But let's stick with this for now.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying the vote split from the actual David's tribe is hedging against the Goliaths throwing a stray vote.
Right, but I had...
Sorry, this is not a worthwhile exercise. I am not even close to where you are on this question.
But I'm not saying anything complicated. I think you're just being deliberately obtuse, and I don't know why. But look, okay, let's try this again. Once more for posterity.
We've established that I am Dan.
You are Dan. Good. So, you know your group is putting 7 votes on some number of Davids. As it turns out, all 7 of those are going on Christian. The Davids are voting too, so they have 5 votes. They've got to go somewhere. You think, because that's the name you fed them, that's a decoy, that those votes are going on Angelina, which I guess it's not something which you can conclusively know either, so that's an added risk in playing it this way. But even if you know the majority of votes are going on Angelina, do you expect them to have thrown at least 1, possibly 2, votes in another direction just in case this weird double idol 1% scenario ends up coming through?
None of those breakdowns would surprise me too much, whether they go 5-0, 4-1, or 3-2. And that's I'm still tremendously confused about what the question even is. I feel like,
okay,
in Dan's spot, it's very – I don't feel like you can comfortably make that a read barring some very solid reason to do so, where trying to anticipate whether they're going 5-0, 4-1, or 3-2 should not move the needle for you in terms of whom to be idling, I would imagine.
It absolutely should, because if it's 5-0 and you can protect Angelina and now we go to a deadlock and everybody votes again, you get to vote out a David. You get the outcome which your entire Goliath alliance wanted from the outset. It might not be the specific David that you wanted to go home, or excuse me, that Angelina wanted to go home, but it's still a David going home, right? And that's fine. Whereas if it is 3-2, you, knowing that all 7 of your votes are on Christian and are now nullified, then when you play the idol for Angelina, you're not... All you're doing is deflecting the vote from Angelina onto any other Goliath, which is worse for you, because she's the Goliath you like the least, in theory. So if that's the case, you are not only misplaying your idol, you are actively using it to engineer a worse outcome for yourself. Whereas... if it's 5-0 on Angelina, then you can bite the bullet and do that, knowing that you still get to vote out of David.
Okay, you do make a compelling counterpoint in the scenario where Angelina is a substantially worse person for Dan to be leaving around, which I absolutely will grant is a possibility, especially if like those other 2 votes are going to be on Kara or so, or, you know, the backup person if he idols Angelina ends up being specifically Kara, I think is a lot worse, although I don't know how high up the David target list she currently is. I am okay, officially but... Dom. What?
Okay, let's say they don't even have any other target in mind. If it's not Angelina, they're going to throw a dart at a board, and that's how they decide which other Goliath they're voting for. Is that even better than Angelina going home? Because it feels like Dan is, he has better bonds with at least Allison, Alec, Kara, maybe Mike White as well. I assume John as well because of the whole Botracho thing. It feels like Angelina is, of all the Goliaths that he might choose to keep around, she would be at the bottom of his list. So this is, if it's breaking down the way that I'm trying to articulate, then this is underrated in how bad it is as a move. Like, this is a historically bad move for Dan if you can anticipate it going this way.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I certainly do hear what you're saying, where you are essentially protecting the person where once you see Davey get up and you know this vote is already not going your way, and it's going to almost definitely be a Goliath leaving unless they have all of their votes on someone and I can idle out that person. I understand what you're saying when if that person is the last person I would want to keep around anyway, sitting on the idol makes a lot more sense there. I just thought you were asking merely about like the sheer math behind how it will impact his decision and so forth. And I feel like if Dan has decided in this scenario where Angelina is openly in front of everyone saying, Dan, please play your idol on me, Dan. And everyone obviously knows you have the idol going forward at this point. Most don't know about that second one. But regardless, it still seems like I understand at least why Dan, given the actual context and given who Dan is and given the way Dan thinks, is never even – and virtually no one is ever going to be thinking on that level. And I think while I agree, you make a good point that this could be in various timelines an historic kind of blunder. I really don't know how hard of a time I can give someone like Dan for – coming up with this kind of reaction based on all of the contextual factors in the moment.
So what I'm saying, though, is take all of the fuzzy math out of the equation here. Going into the next vote, you're going to be up 6-5, even if one of the glass goes home. That might actually be better in terms of bonding the glass together as a group, because Alex is always a wild card, and you know that. But outside of that, when the five Davids are able to put this crazy scheme into place and present this united front, then there is much less incentive for any Goliath who feels they're at the bottom to flip over, because they're making a horizontal move now instead of a vertical one. You're just going from sixth on one side to sixth on the other, and maybe lighting five jury votes on fire in the process. So you can be more sure, I think, that the Goliaths are going to stick together, at least in the short term, and then when you get down to 10 or 9 or 8, you can start trimming the fat a bit. But for now, if Dan can be in a solid majority with a few different allies, with Angelina already being a target, and you have these other connections you can work, and you have two idols, one of which nobody other than Kara knows about, that's a great spot to be in. Why blow up your own spot, potentially, just to maybe save a Goliath that you didn't want in the game to begin with 3 days ago?
Right, and I think the answer is, again, the litany of contextual reasons in the heat of the moment that led to Dan making what I would say is a move a huge percentage of Survivor players would make. And I hear what you're saying about how much of an oversight that may end up being, and maybe giving the Tai Trang kind of finger wag cold shoulder here, while much less TV friendly, is certainly the better idea. I am not willing to kill especially someone like Dan for not seeing all of those angles when he has 10 seconds to make his mind up.
Okay.
All right. So, Dom, after all of these canceled votes get read, as I've said, I was near certain that it was going to be, unfortunately, my boy, or not, potentially, as of this week, Mike White leaving here. But instead, my jaw hit the floor when I saw John become the true Brochacho blindside of the week. And of course, in retrospect, everything clicked about all we've seen about him talking about the Brochacho blindside. And that was a fantastic instance of I don't even remember where I heard this, and I'm sure I'm going to paraphrase it poorly, but I've heard something to the effect of, like, good writing is when you get to the end and it's a surprise, but you also recognize that it couldn't have ended any other way. And I feel like this is a perfect example of that, this big John building up this Brochacho blindside and then being the Brochacho getting blindsided out of absolutely nowhere. As I think Nick put it, just them flying in off the top rope, I thought was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, you want the audience to feel dumb because they should have seen it coming. And right, they had the tools to, and they just didn't. And yeah, I think they set this up perfectly. And yeah, Nick, as much as I know people have reservations about Nick based on outside the game stuff, perfect line, perfect delivery. You got to give him some credit for that.
No doubt about it, for sure. That was strong. And really want to commend Johnny Wrestling here on his way out for truly seeming to, like, not even be fazed by it, like, all smiles, giving him the hang loose signal. Christian is saying, hey, I still want to be comptroller of Slamtown. He's like, you got it, man. No problem. Now, I know this probably isn't as big of a deal being on TV. It's not a new thing for John. I'm sure he was very aware of the cameras and wanted to come across well whenever possible. But I still loved seeing in a game that often seems to get the best of even the most kind of experienced people, worldly experienced people. I really loved seeing John stay so positive on his way out here, despite leaving under such insane circumstances, because I feel like it's got to, no matter what else he has going on in his real life, be a real tough blow for anyone in that kind of spot to give up so much to come on Survivor and then go out like that. So for John to handle it so well, I thought was really commendable.
Yeah, I guess it's easier to land on your feet when you do have so much else going on. You have millions of dollars, and more importantly, millions of Twitter followers.
I'll take the under on millions of dollars for a guy wrestling in Mexico.
Okay, millions of Twitter followers at least, which is more important. But yeah, he was a total class act both in the game and outside the game too. In his exit press and his Ponderosa video was also good. And I might have been setting him short with the being skeptical about the whole introspection thing from a few episodes ago, because it feels like he is genuinely very thoughtful and willing to examine his own place in the world and question that. And a big one. Do you think he's maybe on a the back of a napkin pencil list somewhere for people to come back for another season?
I'm sure he's at least penciled in there. I don't think he's going to be penned in anytime soon. But yeah, he's got to be in the mix, especially with that elimination, right?
Yeah.
Where he's got the whole kind of like Malcolm 3.0 thing of like what could have been if he'd gotten a different kind of chance here.
In a way, that might be the best thing that happened to him in the game. If he was going to be targeted at Final 7 or something anyway, then why not go out in a blaze of glory like this, in one of the most memorable episodes we've had in a long time, and which I'm sure has caught the eye of people in casting, certainly. And also, he is the physical embodiment of this David versus Goliath theme, but whenever you need someone who is just incredibly large and strong, like, James Clement is funny, right? And he had the same kind of amazing exit in his first season, but I think he would have been brought back in some capacity at some point just because he's 6'8" and could snap you like a twig with his, you know, with his pinky finger, right? And John has the same thing going for him. So if you need that diversity in casting, it's not the diversity we usually think of when we talk about that, but it is a real thing, and John typifies that perfectly.
Yeah, and I mean, you brought up something about James that I think has been more forgotten over time. The further we got away from his first season, but James particularly in China was very funny. And I think John could have been really funny too. It seemed like he had some good quips scattered in there. He just didn't get a ton of focus. And honestly, in retrospect, that may make a little more sense now that we've seen how he ended up being eliminated, where this, historically, idol victims tend to be under-edited. And while he got plenty that caught my eye, it makes a lot of sense why John, who I would imagine would be someone they would have wanted to make a bigger character, maybe more so in timelines where he went further than Final 12, but particularly when he gets idled out, it seems like they don't want the audience to be like totally heartbroken by the person who it seems like at least arguably got like robbed by a twist in the game, at least as some casuals may see it. So I thought story very much checked out to see John kind of leave in a weird way.
Well, up your game, CBS, because I was heartbroken and am heartbroken, and I'm sure I'll be over it in time, but for now I'm crying more than Gabby is, as I struggle to deal with John being out of the game now.
All right. Dom, I know we want to hit the edit zone quickly, but anything else before we head over to that?
No, let's dive right in there.
You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Mike Holloway.
Michelle Ken.
Brad Culpepper.
David Goliath.
You are listening to the Dom and Colin
Edit Zone.
What are you doing?
Tune out now.
All right, so here we are in the edit zone, and I think the place to begin is by checking in on the kind of line in the sand, the Coach Wade line in the sand that I drew last week in the edit zone, which is, I, for me at least, established a pretty clear big three after that merge episode, and that group for me was Nick, Kara, and Christian. What did you think about these three in this follow-up episode? And did anyone separate themselves from the pack or drop back too far for you?
I wonder if Christian's dropping pretty far back, because he was shown as being unaware of his impending doom and having to be saved from that by Nick and Davey and these other Davids. Did you get that sense too? Or does Christian's just comic persona almost shield him from that brand of criticism?
So I very much got that sense, and it would, in 2012, not have been atypical for a young Colin Stone, after that episode, to come in here, shut up, Dom, fuck you for saying I'm not young, to come in here after something like this and be very tempted to hang the dun chain on Christian. I thought he had a very bad episode this week, but I'm not going to go there. I think he's got to still be drawing live. We've seen certainly plenty of winners have worse episodes than Christian got here, even at Tribal Council, as I thought was easily the worst scene of his entire season here, was this Tribal Council just kind of frantically making anything, you know, trying to make anything happen for himself at whatever opportunity he can grip onto. It still seemed like people were still finding him funny and charming, even as they thought they were about to vote him out of the game. I still feel like there's got to be plenty of reason to believe in Christian. But in terms of edit, yeah, this episode, I would say, put him as the easy number three for me. Well, much further ahead than anyone else in the pack. I would still or I would now, I suppose, have him decidedly, at least this week, behind Nick and Kara in that order.
He's in a weird spot because even though he is an incredibly smart guy and they try to make the natural Cochrane comparisons jump out at you, he's not the mastermind, right? He's not someone who's constantly giving confessionals about, well, we have three votes going this way and four votes going another way. He's a great narrator, so sometimes he gets the opportunity to talk about strategy, but that's not his entire shtick. And so looking somewhat less competent in the game, I don't think hurts him as much. But yeah, it's still not a good look, however you slice it. So if he was in the top tier before, which I still think was up for debate, then I think he has dropped out of it now for the time being.
Yeah, I mean, I would still, he is, I would say Nick and Kara are my top tier, and Christian is tier 1A, and I'm not even sure if there is a tier 2. But I would say Kara is like the opposite of that for me, where with Christian, it's, I understand why we would see a ton of this guy no matter what, and even if he looks a little aloof from time to time, that's not necessarily the end of the world. For me, Kara just continues to be the second coming of the Michelle Fitzgerald logic of, it's not nearly as overt as it was with Michelle, where they were just like forcing her onto the screen every single episode, even as she was not going to a single vote for like the first 20 days. With Kara, to me, it's not the sheer volume of Kara. It is something I've touched on in the last few edit zones. It really seems like as evolved as the editing has become, or is at least becoming, and as they're doing more and more to balance it out, the one thing they still seem almost unwilling to do, except to Adam Klein and a few other various people for single episodes along the way, is show the faults of the winners. And that's why, you know, someone like Gabby, we're seeing so much more of, and she does look good for a lot of it, but we're also seeing a lot of the reasons why Gabby might not win, whereas just every single thing that we see from Kara makes her look good, and that has got to stand out when we're now 8 episodes into this.
Look, we already know you think Kara looks good. There's no new information there. But I do agree with you. It's never made that explicit. And I worry that it's still too subtle for the casual fans at home or at the home that I was watching in yesterday to pick up on in that way. But when people do see her on screen, they do seem to like what they see. And there's no reason not to. So I don't know if they could make her a more visible presence if they wanted to. But is that a concern for you, or do you think that's just how things are always going to be?
I think they could if they wanted to, but after Michelle, I think they might worry about tipping it a little too hard. Like, I think that's exactly what they did with Michelle. And this is, while not a full kind of bounce back in the other direction, I think they, and again, I don't mean to make it sound like they're editing this whole season around duping the people, the 0.001% of us who read the edit, but I do think they are certainly aware that a large group of people saw right through the Michelle thing and would take some care with Kara were she to find herself in that same spot.
Sure.
And then my other favorite blonde here at the top of these rankings, Dom, is of course Nick Wilson here, who has, after a lower-key merge, a really big rebound episode here for me that is adequate enough to the point that I'm going to say I don't even have any concerns about him not being super visible at the merge. I feel like this is right back to business, certainly something we've seen from plenty of winners before. I would say Nick is my easy number one, frankly, at this point.
Yeah, I don't even know who would be up there in the same tier at this stage.
Yeah, I think that's pretty straightforward. I know there was a little controversy hanging the Dunn chain around Gabby potentially prematurely. I am still standing by that. Do you think Gabby has any equity?
I don't. I stand by what I said last week, and it's not the kind of thing which I think can be overturned now. Like, if the criticism is in the first 6 episodes she was crying too much, then regardless of how little she cries in the next 6 episodes, that still stands tall.
So, like I just said about Nick, he had a lower key merge and just came back to life this episode, and no real reason to be concerned. The same could be said about Davey. Where do you land on that? Because Davey was literally invisible at that merge, and I think that's kind of a big distinction.
That is a big deal. For me, it's going to come down to what we see from Davey next week. If he can keep that momentum going and be this big presence again and explain why he did that. And we see other people saying how scary Davey is or how much they love Davey, or if Christian is really grateful to Davey, then I think he's still got a shot. But it really will hinge on what we see next week.
So let's settle the debate conclusively then. Who is the bigger Mike White fan? I'm going to leave Mike White in here with 3% equity. Are you going over or under?
I'm actually going over. I'm going to give him a solid 5 to 8%.
Oh, I can't believe you didn't say 4. You're like Ethan Zahn at Final Travel Council messing it up. 888% from Mike White.
I'm not trying to min-max it. I'm just telling you what I think.
All right. So certainly looking forward to next week's episode. I mean, what reason could we possibly have not to be? It seems like a very exciting political dynamic emerging here and some advantages that could potentially turn all of that on its head. So, Dom, any other calls or takes you wanted to get out there before we take off?
None for now. You've ringed, roared, or in any way coerced all of those out of me. But I'm sure I'll have replenished my stock by next week for sure.
All right, sounds good. I am, of course, on Twitter at Colin Stone. He is on Twitter at DomHRV. He also has Instagram in case you want to stalk him even harder. I believe branding cohesively also at DomHRV on Instagram. You can email the show, DomandColin@gmail.com. And, of course, weekly bonus episodes over at Patreon.com/DomandColin. Almost done with Heroes versus Villains. So a new season soon on the horizon there. And of course, as we mentioned at the top of the show, the West Wing, Australian Survivor, and Making a Murderer podcast also just went up. So check those out if you haven't yet already. We will talk to you guys very soon. Take care, everybody.